Big show for you here planned today. Kick it off as we always do with Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. And Elliot, the latest blog just dropped at sportsnet.ca. So I want to get into some Robin Leonard stuff with you here in a couple of moments. In the meantime...
You know, at first, Jeff, if you don't mind, I just heard you talking about Ryan Gibbons. Just, yes. I wanted to pass on. The word is that... I think he had was able to talk to some of the other officials last night, and it sounds like as bad as it looked, he's recovering. So, I mean, I don't know how long he'll be out, but as bad as it looked, it sounds like the prognosis at least isn't as dire as it potentially could have been. So that's the good news. I just wanted to pass on.
Absolutely. That was a horrifying scene. Like just a couple of thoughts, and then we'll move on. Like that's a horrific scene because all you initially see, and it's the LA Kings broadcast of the game, and all you see is Ryan Gibbons, you know, collapsing on the blue line, and you don't initially see the contact with Liam O'Brien. You just think that he skated out and he's collapsed, and right away you think the worst, and then a stretcher comes out and you're really thinking the worst. So the fact that he's, you know, communicating with people, looks like it's a concussion, which is still bad, but could have been much worse. You know, the one thing that I don't know that we talk a ton about, because I don't necessarily know that it happens that often, but still, like, we don't talk about officials' injuries at all. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the season...
And last year was a really bad year for it, too.
It totally was.
A lot of guys hurt, yes.
We talk a lot about players' injury and injury report, and we never report on officials that get injured. Man, by the end of that, we talk about players needing to recover and recuperate at the end of the season. Officials are the same way for each. They need to heal up their bodies at the end of the year, and we never really give that much lip service. Jack Eichel, is there a thaw happening between CAA, Jack Eichel, and the Buffalo Sabres?
You know, I don't know if I would call it a thaw. What I think has become a real key point here is that, you know, initially there was some talk if he just rested, would the injury kind of heal itself? And that was one of the paths that Buffalo wanted to take. And I think Eichel did agree that they would see how rest did, if rest would be an effective tactic. And from what I understand right now, there seems to be, you know, even the Sabres did say that we're at a point now where we're going to need some kind of surgery. And from what I've heard, we're simply getting to a point where, you know, you can't just leave the disc exposed on the nerve. You can't do that. You have to deal with it somehow. So from what I'm hearing, that's become a big part of this. I re-listened this morning to the commissioner's interview with you where he talked about Eichel. Mm-hmm. And he talked about, you know, the key is, you know, he says people have to be patient. But he also talked about the most important thing is Eichel's care. And I think that's kind of where we are now. I hear there's a lot of conversation about, look, we have to do something. We have to get to this point where something is done about this. So I think that's what they're trying to work towards. You know, there's been differing information about what other teams are allowed to see. I checked last week. I was told the Sabres still hadn't allowed their information to be shared. But what I think that Eichel's agents have done at CAA is they've taken him for several MRIs, including, I think, one as recently as this week. And those results are being shared so other teams can see it. So I think that's how you kind of explain, you know, the discrepancy about what records are being seen. I think that they've taken in the incentive to say, okay, we can do this, and now you can see what we've got, and that's definitely going on out there. I have heard, although no one's willing to go on the record about it, that there are teams willing to do the disc replacement, but you've got to make a trade first. So where I think a lot of this push right now is coming from, Jeff, is that there's a recognition that Eichel needs a procedure done. So how do we get there? And I think one of the things that's being considered is, do you trade him now and have him have the surgery and then come back and rejoin the new team? Or do the Sabres get to a point where they allow the surgery and say, okay, you're going to come back and play for us, bump up your trade value, and then we make the deal? And I don't know what the answer is, but I do know the fact that there's an understanding that Eichel needs a procedure to get done and sooner rather than later has kind of pushed this thing forward.
You see, trying to speculate on a trade for Jack Eichel here is challenging. And when you consider how long he's going to be out, whether he has the spinal fusion or the disc replacement, you know, it narrows down the amount of teams that could be interested in getting him, given the fact that you're going to have to give up something substantial, both from your lineup, in your pipeline, and draft picks as well. Like, this is, I don't see a team that is going to be or has eyes to being competitive the entire season making a deal for Jack Eichel, because you're going to be A, removing a huge piece or pieces from your team right away as you wait for Jack Eichel. Like, I can see this being, I don't know, pick a team. I mean, Anaheim would seem like an appropriate one. Maybe the San Jose Sharks, a team like that, one that doesn't necessarily have, you know, playoff expectations. And then I can see a whole bunch of draft pick contingencies attached to it based on performance, i.e. if he plays 30 games this year, you tack on a first-round pick. If he plays 50 games next year, that's another first-round pick. Like, this to me, Elliot, seems like it's going to be one of the most complicated trades we've seen in some time.
Yeah, that's possible. I definitely see room for all of that. The only thing I might question about your theory, Jeff, is if the Sabres are only interested in futures. Like, one of the teams that I think was in on it that's now out, what someone from there told me was that Buffalo was asking for, like, the key part of the deal was some of their best prospects and a couple of high draft picks. Like, mm-hmm. like anyone off their roster wasn't a big priority for the Sabres. And, you know, I think that you get into a situation there where a team might have to trade a player off their roster simply to make it work cap-wise, but it wasn't a player that they considered necessarily to be enormous to their success. So, you know, I think your point's a good one. If you're trading for Eichel now, you're trading him knowing you might not have him for a while. But I don't know if it necessarily affects your team if you're just giving up pieces off your futures or your draft picks. So there may be a way to move around that, possibly. But I think the rest of what you're saying is all true.
Do you think this is a situation we talked about, Pat Brisson, CAA, trying to facilitate a trade here? Just for listeners that may not be familiar with how that dynamic might work, would that be the agent approaching other general managers, trying to put a package together and presenting that to the Buffalo Sabres? Would that be how this would work? Or is this just, listen, Kevin Adams is deciding, Kevin Adams is going to market, Kevin Adams is going to find his deal?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's what the Sabres are willing to allow. That's number one. Number two, I think everybody knows, like by now, everybody knows what the Sabres want for Eichel. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows. They want high-end prospects and they want high picks. They want really young core players, right? They don't want, someone sent me a trade proposal. What if Calgary traded Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk for Jack Eichel? Like, that makes no sense for Buffalo. None. That's like, that's a sports radio call trade. Like, that just makes zero sense at all. Buffalo doesn't want.
Yeah.
One
player on an expiring contract and another player who's 1 year away from under the agency. That does nothing for the Buffalo Sabres.
That makes no sense for Buffalo to do. And so, like, I don't think that, you know, anyone talking about Eichel now is in the dark about what Buffalo wants to do here. I think everybody realizes it. I think the key for the agents here are to make people comfortable with the idea of acquiring Eichel or putting Eichel in a position where he can get his surgery and come back to play. So I think right now they're moving two avenues. Number one, trying to convince the Sabres that their best chance of trading Eichel for the best value is let him get healthy and come back and play great, and all of a sudden everybody in the league wants him, or B, making the deal and just ending the saga before it gets, you know, publicly worse for you in any particular way, shape, or form, or also getting to teams and saying, here's the medical information we have from our own MRIs, you can see what it is we're looking at and what we're thinking of doing. I just think we're in a position now where that's the role of the agent.
To Robin Leonard and a 17-minute press conference yesterday, explaining his tweets from the weekend, and while not going into much detail, indicating that he, as you've reported, talked to the NHL Players Association, talked to the NHL as well. And, you know, not that he's going back on some of his claims, but he's saying, look, I plan to handle things in a different way. When I have these feelings, they're not going to be for social media. They're going to be for a conversation with the NHL or the Players Association. That's how I can best affect change. Your thoughts on what we heard from Robin Leonard yesterday?
Well, I mean, the number one thing is that, you know, Leonard is optimistic that, you know, something can get done that he really feels is important to get done. You know, he did this for a reason. And, you know, far be it from me, like he did it. This is his initiative. And if he's comfortable with where it's headed, you know, that's the thing that matters. You know, I know there were some people who were saying, or disappointed that maybe he won't be doing Twitter blasts anymore, or who feel he's being silenced. I strongly suspect that one of the reasons this won't continue to go on Twitter or that medium was because the message with Vigneault got really garbled to the point where Vigneault had to apologize for something he shouldn't have had to apologize for, right? Yeah. So, or not apologize, sorry, but deny and say that
we had
I'm not responsible.
Yes. Comment on something. Sorry. He had nothing
not
to do
apologize.
With.
Yeah. Apologize yeah. is a bad term. Vigneault had to deny that he was responsible for something that Leonard didn't even mean to accuse him of. So I have no doubt that that's part of the whole thing here. I mean, we'll see where this goes. A conversation about the use of these kinds of pills is never a bad thing. I don't think that's bad at all. I think he's got a lot of support from players on the whole Eichel situation. But I have to say, like, one of the things that maybe I shouldn't have been so surprised, because in that moment when he's doing that tweet storm, you're sitting there as a reporter and you're thinking, okay, how do I verify all this stuff, or how do I figure out all this stuff? And then all of a sudden, you know, you got people saying, a lot of people saying, is Leonard okay? Like, yeah, I think there were people really worried that, considering everything he's been through, maybe he's going through a bad chapter, or there's an incident going on or something like that. And, you know, he said yesterday he felt really good. He was really optimistic about it. I've heard that, you know, around the team, they think he's in a really good place and showed up really excited to play for this year. So I think, as much as anything else, Jeff, considering that was the reaction I got, I'm happy to hear that he's in a good place.
Yes, and you know, he did indicate as well. I mean, I believe the term that he used was cry for help when he talked about the weekend, and this was a cry for help. And the one thing that he did go out of his way to point out was that this got everybody to the table. Like, it may have been an awkward way to park your car, slamming into a couple of other cars beside you, but you parked the car. Like, he got the issue is now out in the open. And it got the attention of the Players Association, and it certainly got the attention of the NHL as well. Something around this time of the year, which is particularly interesting, revolving around one position in particular, is the waiver wire. Now, normally the waiver wire is, oh, okay, ho-hum, this player is being sent down to the American Hockey League, and generally there's not a claim. But right around this time, as everyone sort of takes stock of their goaltending situation, the goalie waiver wire at this time, Elliot, is always fascinating. Toronto putting Michael Hutchison on waivers. We'll see what happens with Chicago. There's some speculation there. Malcolm Subban. Like, how do you see the goalie waiver wire shaking out in the next few days here as teams get drilled down to what their squad's going to be?
Well, I definitely think there are teams considering Hutchison. And, you know, last year it was made even more challenging because of the taxi squad, right? And you were able to keep extra goalies, and, you know, the whole Canadian border situation made that even trickier. This year there's no taxi squad, at least not for now, and you can only keep two goalies unless you want to carry three on your roster. I do think there's interest in Hutchison. I think some teams are going to consider it. I think one of them is probably Florida. They lost Samuel Montembeau to Montreal, of course. So I'm curious to see what they're thinking there when it comes to their goaltending depth. Mm-hmm. You know, I wondered last night, Pavel Francouz got injured for Colorado. what's the situation there? What are they thinking? Are there any teams out there who really haven't liked their goaltending so far to start the season? I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's whether or not anyone actually does it is a different question, but I do think we're in a situation where there are teams that are going to consider it.
Colorado knows Hutchison.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
That is interesting. A couple of other things. Evander Kane, AJ Perez from Front Office Sports reporting the possibility that Kane submitted a fake vaccination card, which is at the heart of this latest investigation. What do you hear? What do you know?
Well, I'm going to be very careful with this one because when we reported last week, it was really heavily lawyered. So I'm very careful about what I say about this. All I'd say is this. I mean, he's under investigation for breach of COVID protocol. But the one thing I wondered about was, and also we know there's another investigation going on to him due to the divorce papers filed by his estranged wife. One of the things I was just told with this particular one, the COVID situation, I was asking, could this mean a termination of his contract? And which is something that he's discussed in his own bankruptcy filings. All I've been told at this point in time was, I don't think that's happening. So, I don't want to comment on the specific story because, like I said, I was pretty heavily lawyered last week. But, just from a contract, because people are asking, could his contract be voided for this? I didn't get that impression. I could always be wrong, but I didn't get that impression.
To a couple more things. And I do want to ask you about Minnesota before Bill Guerin joins us here in a couple of moments. But first, for a number of years, we've waited for a legitimate Tampa-Florida rivalry. And we finally got the two teams meeting in the playoffs last season. Was a tough series. Florida pushed them. Tampa won that opening round matchup. And I don't know if you want to call it spillover, carryover, but the embers are still hot. Sam Bennett with a little bit of a not-so-friendly bump on Andre Vasilevsky. And the next thing you know, you grab the game sheet and you see Bennett, Kachuk, Perry, Gudas, Sergachev, Marchment, Bogosian, Maroon, Colton. It's old-school hockey. I don't think either franchise like to see that in the preseason for the potential for injuries. But what did you make of Florida-Tampa last night? And by the way, they still play each other a couple more times in the preseason.
So much for exhibition hockey not being worth watching, right?
Well, it's exciting. Teams.
Bennett really pissed off the Lightning, too. Yeah, Bennett really pissed off the Lightning, too. Like, did you hear what Cooper said afterwards? He was mad. He was hot.
Well, you hit the goalie, right? I mean, it's old school.
1980, what would have happened if that would have occurred?
Isn't like Probert, though, running, goaltenders every time Boston and Buffalo came to Joe Louis Arena.
It's great for the sport. It's good for hockey in Florida. But that rivalry is that mean. I mean, those are two teams that are, look, one of the things that stood out for me when we talked to Steven Stamkos is what did the Lightning say last year? Who cares where we finish? Let's just get into the playoffs. We're good enough to beat everybody, right?
Yep.
So, and Tampa's going to be a playoff team. I don't think anyone's questioning that. I'd like Florida to make the playoffs this year. But I think it's going to be tough. I think, to me in that division, there's five teams for three spots. I'm putting Tampa in, and I'm putting Buffalo and Detroit out. And so that leaves, Toronto, Montreal, Florida, Buffalo, and Ottawa. And those Tampa-Florida games, when those two teams are good, they're meaningful. And those are going to be can't-miss games this year. Like, there would be times you would put Tampa, Florida on a schedule and people would be yawning. Nobody's going to be yawning this year.
No, that's must-see TV on your NHL Live. Okay, before we let you go, quick thought on the Minnesota Wild. Bill Guerin, Minnesota general manager, coming up here in a couple of moments for each. I know there's some pain coming up in the next couple of years on their salary cap as the buyouts really hit hard for Suter and Parise, but it's still an exciting team. Parise's under contract. Joel Eriksson-Ek on that line with Parise and Zuccarello looks fantastic. Do you have a thought on how we should be feeling about Minnesota?
Well, I think, you know, I think one of the things that he really did this offseason too was he gave Matt Dumba security, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, I'm really curious to see how, now that the expansion drafts are done and Dumba didn't get traded and they made some of these other moves, you know, I'm really curious to see how Dumba plays. Like, all that stuff is finally gone now. What does that do for you? Mm-hmm. I think the other thing too is that a flat cap forces you to make tougher decisions. You know, when you constantly think the cap is going up, you can always feel you can outspend your mistakes, right? Yes. Well, now you can't do that. Now you can't do that. And, you know, I would have loved to have seen Guerin's phone after that got announced to see what the reactions were of other general managers. And how many other general managers are going to their owners now and saying, this is what Minnesota did. How do we feel about that? Mm-hmm. What if we have feel we have to do something similar? I just think that the thing about him, I think that why I think he'll be successful is he's not afraid. And it's one thing I wrote today about Bergevin. You know, Bergevin has got 1 year left and Montreal is deciding what to do. And I think Bergevin's asking for a nice raise. And to me, Bergevin's biggest strength for being in that market is he commits to his plan. We've seen a lot of GMs in difficult situations who are high intensity situations who can't commit to their plan. And their owner's buddy says, why are you such a moron? The owner's all over the GM, or the fans are all mad about something, because inevitably you do something that's going to make your fans mad and the pressure comes. Like, Guerin's doesn't seem to be bothered by that.
You know, I can recall, and there's media pressure. I remember, you know, a legendary story with, you know, the Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens poised to do a deal. It was Claude Lemieux going to Toronto. I think Shane Corson may have been in the deal. Wendell Clark may have been going the other way. Maybe Gary Lehman. Red Fisher caught wind of it and called the brass and said, you make this deal, I'll run you out of town. And the deal never got made. I don't think that anyone in the media is pushing around Mark Bergevin at all.
We make him crazy. I have no doubt that's true.
Oh, he doesn't like us. Like, no, I'm not saying he enjoys the experience with us.
Yeah, he can't stand us, but we don't tell him what to do.
Because he won't listen. Okay, that's great. Friege, thanks so much. We'll rejoin with you tomorrow, just afternoon at Eastern.